believe assault is an act, not an adjective. Your safety is not just on the gun, it is the gun. Freedom is a fundamental human right. Welcome to your show, Two-Way Radio with Bill Carnes. Your safety is your responsibility, not the government's, not anybody else's. Be a citizen, not a subject. Better yet, be a listener. Because it's an inalienable right, not a privilege. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is live, right now. Call 1-800-313-9443.
Sure happy it's Friday, I got to tell you. A lot of stuff been going on this week. A lot more stuff coming up in the next. I have not talked much about my Target stand widget invention of sorts because my mom was in town for this week, so I didn't go to the shop and work on it at all. However, I did find a way to simplify the entire idea. So directly after the show today, I get to go into the shop and build up the latest and greatest version. So kind of looking forward to that. It's really neat to shape and form this thing into what should be literally an industry-changing design to a be-all, end-all of a Target stand. And I am very excited with the prospects. My hope and vision with this whole deal is to get a final design done. Once it's done and I'm able to test this thing, which it shouldn't take too much to test it, it should take me better part of a day to put it through its paces. Then if everything works out, if I need to make any changes, do it, and then apply for a patent. Once the patent is applied for, I'm good to go. Then I would go to some different fabricators out there and look at the cost of having it fabricated in steel and look at having it fabricated in a double thick-walled aluminum. I actually bought some aluminum pieces yesterday to be able to get this thing together. The only thing is, I don't have the ability to weld aluminum. I don't have the skill level. I've never even tried to weld aluminum. However, in my small town of Pahrump, there is a machine shop here, and I went and I spoke with this fellow earlier this week, and he said, yeah, you know, I can cut, weld, drill, do whatever you want with aluminum. I said, okay, you know, that's fine. What I will probably do then is build one out of steel and then bring you the steel pieces and have you duplicate them in the aluminum, which I will provide. So I got to tell you, that double-thick-walled aluminum stuff, it's the 125 thickness walled rather than the 0.625 or 0.0625 is the 0.125. It's pricey, especially in little pieces. that might be a little cost prohibitive doing this stand. Anyhow, once these two things are built and tested, I'll probably actually go get them powder-coated and get these things tested out. If it all works out, I'll be looking for major fabricators to see what the cost would be to get these things mass-produced in steel and in aluminum. And then a powder coater, what their price would be to mass powder coat steel and aluminum. And then go to a shipping company and find out what it would cost to ship out steel and aluminum. Probably be about the same either way. And then, if all goes well, I will be able to try to put together a booth at this year's SHOT Show in Las Vegas, which is in February. I don't know the costs on that, and quite honestly, I hope it's a pretty reasonable, because your said host here is not flush with excess cash like he once was. But it'd be interesting if I could do this, go to the SHOT Show, pre-sell a bunch of these things in order, and then it would take probably about 2 weeks to get them built, powder-coated, and shipped out. So anyhow, that is the plan of yours truly. Hopefully it all comes together. Several things need to happen, and they need to happen somewhat timely, and I'm hoping to get all that done. Got stuff coming up for you after the break, so stay tuned. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio.
Rule 1, assume it's loaded. Rule 2, don't point it at anything you're not willing to destroy. Rule 3, listen to the 2A radio show with Bill Carnes. 1-800-313-9443.
All right, so during the break, I rebooted the computer I use here for the show, and that's because my thumb drive that keeps my notes and other information and other little utility programs on it isn't being read, and rebooting did nothing, so we're going to wing through the rest of some of this. I do have some notes on the computer, just not all of them on my drive. Okay, some email I got from Pete. Pete, thanks very much for the email. I spoke yesterday about different ammunition going into your guns, and I said, for a defensive gun, use only factory ammo, quality factory ammo. Pete went off on this wonderful rant about how he does not appreciate Wolf ammunition. Well, that's fine. Just don't shoot Wolf if you don't like it. Some people like Cellar and Below. Some people can't stand it. S&B also is it's called. Some people love PMC. Some people can't stand it. Whatever. Carry what you want. If you don't like something, don't carry it. The reason I am not a fan in any means of people carrying hand loads in their defensive guns is an issue of, let's say that you put like a really sweet, totally bitchin', basically all but explosive round in your gun and put some really high-end, hot-burning Vita Vore powder, you know, a match prime, just really high-end components. Well, that's easy enough for someone. If you have an otherwise righteous shooting, and let's say that person doesn't quite make it, and they are DRT, or dead right there, they don't survive the shooting. Generally not that big a deal. No big deal. Unless you have your own hand loads in there, then what you're looking at is possibly a criminal issue with the DA saying, well, why did you build your own little hot cooked up killer bullets? And that's generally if you're in a non-gun friendly area. Even more so, what you have a problem with, and this is in any area, is a civil liability, where even if you shoot somebody and they survive, they can sue. If you shoot somebody and they die, then their relatives can sue you, or their next of kin. It happens. They win. They win commonly in California. Imagine that, in that communist state. But if you brewed up something down in your basement, then what you're looking at is a potential for a really sweet civil liability case against you. It's a carry factory ammo. It's interesting. You all are familiar with my friend and occasional co-host, Ed Winchester. When Ed Winchester was in the police academy some years ago, you had to provide your own ammunition, and the rangemaster made a statement something along the lines of, and I don't want you bringing anything that you brewed up in your basement unless your last name is Remington or Winchester. Which, of course, would have opened the door based on that goofy statement for Ed to bring some hand loads. However, Ed does not hand load. And it's funny, Ed didn't say a word, not a word. But, of course, there's a couple of jackasses in his academy saying, oh, his name is Winchester. It's like, just shut up. I'm going to hit you with a sock full of quarters. Just shut up. Anyhow, interesting stuff. When it comes to hand loads, I hand load, but I only hand load a few different rifle rounds. I don't do anything handgun right now. I don't have a progressive reloader. I have two single-stage presses. One is an RCBS rock chucker, which is my main press. And then I have a Lee single-stage press. And the only thing I use that Lee press for is for different case prep-related items. I don't actually seat any bullets with it. If I'm going to put a crimp on a round, I'll load it with the rock chucker, and then I'll put it into the lead to crimp it. I'll do things like that. But the following calibers, the only thing that I've loaded thus far is 22-250, because I have an electronic primed cartridge, because of I have a Remington 700 Etronix, E-T-R-O-N-X, is the rifle that it fires out of. It takes an electronic primer, so I pretty much have to hand load those. 308 Winchester, and 30-30 Winchester. Those are the three that I have loaded. I also have the dies for doing 8mm French Lebel rifle, 8mm Lebel rifle. And I also have the dies for doing 7.5mm Swiss, which is the Schmidt-Rubin round. I haven't loaded either of the latter. I have a lot of load development put together when it comes to how to load it, what to load, but I haven't yet. 308, I've loaded all kinds of good stuff. I have some precision rounds and some good hunting rounds. As a matter of fact, I'm a fan of these all-copper bullets that you can get from Barnes bullets, the Barnes X, the Barnes TSX. Oh, I'm sorry. I also have 416 Remington Magnum, which I've loaded quite a few of those. And I got to tell you, that is a powder-sucking round. That 416 Remington Magnum, it's based off the 375 H&H Magnum, which is the smallest round, literally, that you can carry out doing the big five in Africa. And they necked it up to 416. That came out in 1988 is when the 416 Rem Mag came out, and it has been an absolutely wildly successful round out in the African tundra. And also even in areas of North America where people have gone after the largest of bear, moose, sometimes even elk. It is an earth-shattering round. So I've loaded many of those. I probably have loaded a couple hundred rounds of that 416 Rem Mag, more than I'll probably ever shoot out of the gun. But I got to tell you, it takes a lot of powder. If it takes, 35 grains worth of powder, not even. I think it's more like 26 grains of powder for 308. It's like 80 grains of powder for 416. So, I mean, you go through a lot. Anyhow, I'm a real fan of these solid copper bullets for hunting. Barnes makes some really good quality stuff. Their peel-back effect for a larger wound channel, just retaining all the pieces, parts of the bullet so you don't have it fragmented inside the game. Wonderful stuff. And I have some loaded up in 165 grain for the 308, as well as some 200 grain, which is an awfully heavy round for 308. As a matter of fact, I've certainly mentioned Chuck Taylor on the show a number of times. His feeling is that you shouldn't shoot anything over about 155 to 165 grains in a 308. It should be that or lighter. Well, I'm a fan of heavy bullets, so I think the lightest thing I have in 308 is 155 grain, like a Hornady AMAX, a little red tip bad boy. Everything else is 165 on up. I'm just a heavy bullet fan. You get further results out of the deal, and it's a little harder hitting when it gets out there. But anyhow, with that being said, I certainly am a fan of reloading, provided you go through all the proper procedures. It disturbs me when I see people who reload and they've got an open beer on their reloading bench that they're sipping on. You know, I mean, guys, I can have a couple of beers and be completely coherent and not even feel as though I've had any alcohol ingested in my body. I mean, a couple of beers, no big deal. But I don't even chance it in certain areas of my life. And one of them is when I'm at my loading bench. To have a beer sitting there as you're loading is a bad combination. On top of, you should always have a rather bright light when you're reloading. And what I do is I use one of those mini fluorescents, the compact fluorescent, because those don't put off heat the way an incandescent bulb does. And I learned a valuable lesson on the behalf of someone else years ago. When I was a cop in Vegas, back in about 95 or 96, there was a guy whose apartment blew up because he had been sitting in his reloading bench, and he left the light on, he left some powder out, and he went to work. And it heated to the point where it caught fire. The fire went from one thing to the next, started burning a powder bottle, and boom, it blew. Which it blew sequentially through several powder bottles. So I learned from that guy's mistake, and when I started loading, I used one of those miniature fluorescents, the compact fluorescents. So anyhow, if you've got that light shining on your bench and you've got your beer there, it's probably going to start heating up. Or if nothing else, all that excess light on beer does not do much for the flavor. It becomes bitter. So treat your beer well. I mean, first of all, drink a quality beer if you're going to drink. And if you're going to drink a quality beer, drink it at the proper temperature for that style of beer. I'm kind of a beer connoisseur. I don't really want to get into all the idiosyncrasies of beer, but I do know that beer and reloading don't mix. So please don't do it. It's like the whole thing when sometimes when people go hunting, now, they might start the day off by cracking open a can of Budweiser or something and then going off for the hunt. Stupid. Right? If you're going to drink when you're out doing your hunting trip, wait until you get back, put the guns away, have the drinks. And there should always be, like, you have a designated driver when you're out. There should be one designated hunter that's not drinking, just in case something happens and there needs to be, somebody needs to have a gun or deal with, you know, other hunters or, you know, two-legged or four-legged animals. Should have one person ready to do it, like a sentry of sorts. So, please, keep the drinking in check when we do anything at all with guns or ammunition. That's just the way to do it. If you're not willing to do that, get rid of your guns, okay? If the booze is so important, get rid of the guns, get rid of the ammo. Just don't mix the two. They don't mix together. It's like oil and water. Stay tuned, guys. We've got more coming up after the break. I'm your host, Bill Carnes, right here on 2A Radio. Have the alcohol and tobacco. Leave the firearms to us. Right now, live, the 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes. And welcome back. I have had several emails about this gun course that I'm going to be hosting sometime in March, out here in Southern Nevada, probably either in Las Vegas or Pahrump. I need to decide on which range would be appropriate. In order to decide on which range would be appropriate, I would need to have an idea of how many people want to go. So email me, bill@2aradio.com, if you have an interest in coming, a serious interest, and coming to this three-day defensive handgun course. It'll be defensive, a little tactical, and it will start if you've never held a gun or if you've carried a gun for a living, everyone will benefit from this course. I flat guarantee it. If you don't benefit from this course, I will refund you your money for the cost of the course. That is my guarantee to you. If you do not leave with a better skill set level than what you came with, I will give you your money back. And I won't ask any questions about it. Now, it's going to be pretty apparent to me what your skill level will be when you get here. It should be pretty apparent to you what your skill level is when you leave. All right? So I just want to lay that out there. If you have an interest in this course, please email me, bill@2aradio.com. If I have 10 people who want to come, then I already know what range I'll use. If I have 30 or 40 people who are interested in coming, well then from there, I know of a different range I would be interested in using and anywhere in between. So, I also need to have an idea of what I need to do on my own side when it comes to when I talk to my insurance carrier, look, this is how many people we're looking at doing, blah, da, 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 for the policy for the course. So, just bear that in mind. I would like to have an idea. I will also let you know when the cutoff date is, which is going to be probably sometime first part of February, so that I can get all of the arrangements finalized when it comes to targets and target stands, which I'm sure I'll be providing, all the materials related for this. What are you going to learn? Well, at the end of the course, you will have the skill set of the following. You'll be able to present your pistol out, draw from a concealed holster, engage a target with 2 to 3 rounds to the chest in the in the vital areas, basically where the rib cage is. Then go through an assessment stage and decide whether or not they need to take one to the head, if they're still a threat. Okay? I'll also teach you the times, the three times when to recognize to forget about the chest and just go straight to the head. Now, another thing, I mentioned Pete earlier. Pete is a good guy, and we end up exchanging emails back and forth. He's a chemist, lives out on the East Coast, and I really enjoy the emails that Pete and I have because they are very candid, if you know what I mean. And Pete says that he always just goes for the head when he practices. He goes, I know you're going to kick my butt for it, but you know, I just practice for the head. I figure it'll stop him. Okay, I want to address the head shots. As a matter of fact, I'll probably put this off and start addressing it in the next segment. We've got about 2.5 minutes left in this segment, so it's more than 2 minutes worth of discussion. So I'll get to that in the next segment. Just I'll try to remember that. But in this course, you will learn how to keep your gun running, as in loaded, and keep it cleared from malfunctions. How to set up a malfunction so you know what it looks like. How to identify a malfunction. And then how to clear it reflexively based on the information that the gun gives to you when you press the trigger and the gun doesn't go bang. If you press the trigger and the gun doesn't go bang, that's been referred to as the loudest sound you probably ever hear in the gunfight, is the silence that it screams at you when it otherwise should have gone bang. So you will learn how to assess and reflexively clear this gun and get it back up and running. And then assess and decide whether or not you still need to shoot. Oftentimes, there are times where you will hear things such as tap, rack, bang. The problem with tap, rack, bang is it always just inherently ingrains shooting after you've gotten the gun back up and running. And that might not be what you want to do. There was a problem in L.A. where a cop ended up with an emergency reload. He shot, the gun was empty, the slide was locked back on an empty magazine. So he dumped the old magazine, put the new one in, racked the action. I'm pantomiming this and I just smacked the microphone. Racked the action, pointed back in and started to press the trigger, which is what he'd been trained to do many, many hundreds of times. Well, this gunfight was going on in a long hallway, and a guy popped his head out of the room. I don't recall whether it was an apartment complex or a hotel or what, but somebody popped their head out of the room to find out what the commotion was. He happened to be between the bad guy and the cop. Well, the cop recognized this, and he's telling himself, you know, don't shoot, don't shoot. But that just reflexive response of pressing the trigger had been so ingrained, he couldn't stop himself. It was second nature. Well, he fired the shot and unfortunately killed the innocent bystander, put a round into him, and he died. And the real sad fact of this deal is he didn't look down range. He didn't keep his eyes open down range as he was clearing this gun. He's looking at his gear instead. And he didn't see that the bad guy was already down. We'll talk about why to not default to the head. Pete, turn up your speakers when we return. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Carnes, 1-800-313-9443. Okay, Pete, I hope you're listening, and those of you in the same ballpark as Pete. When you default your training to shooting to the head, okay, would you agree that everything works from the basis of your torso? All right? You've got your torso, which is where your legs go into your hip sockets, all the way up to where your neck pops out of your rib cage, and where your arms extend out from your rib cage and your torso. Everything works from there. All right. Basically, your belly button is about the middle of the body. Okay. Everything from there moves at a higher speed and with more agility. You can throw your arm out there and move your hand and your wrist and your forearm around a lot more efficiently than you can move your belly button or anything within about a foot of it. So when you go to your head, a good couple, 2-3 feet above that, the head can move, bob, and weave. I mean, you've seen boxers. When people move, their head tends to take them where they want to go. The head, quite honestly, the brain box, which is a little strip of area between basically the tip of your nose and around your eyebrows, the top of your eye. It's about, 2.5-3 inches in height. It's at ear level. If you can take the ear level and draw a band all the way around the head at ear level, from the top of the ear to the bottom of the ear, all the way around the head, that is the area in which to place a shot into somebody's head if they need to get shot in the head. Okay? It's from the tip of the ear to the bottom of the ear in a band all the way around the head, viewed from the front, the side, the back, the angles, wherever. That is penetrable with a defensive handgun round. Okay? And when it's talking from the front, it's essentially a face shot, not a head shot. It'll go through the eye sockets or the soft honeycomb tissue of the sinuses, through the nose, which is essentially just a whole bunch of cartilage in there. That's where the round will go. Draw it around the side. You've got the temple. You've got the ear. The back of the head back there, you've got a thinner part of the skull. Handgun rounds will penetrate through there. It's a narrow band. It's not the Hollywood movie shot where somebody takes a round to the forehead and that's it. Shooting someone in the forehead is about 50% workable, maybe a little less. I have had many emergency room doctors as students of mine over the years. It just happens. You know, you get people from all walks of life. I've had many emergency room doctors. Every single emergency room doctor I have ever had as a student has had people come into their emergency room that were shot in the forehead with any various number of calibers from a .22 up to a .45 where it did not penetrate the skull. Okay? There was a boxer, I forget his name, he died maybe a couple years ago. When they autopsied him, they found out that his frontal area up here, his forehead, was nearly an inch thick. It was 15/16 of an inch of solid bone. Okay? How many rounds are going to penetrate that? Well, none. Usually what will happen is your head is on a bit of a pendulum of sorts. If someone gets shot in the forehead, the head snaps back on the neck, so it helps deflect a lot of the incoming energy. The round will generally start to flatten out and then flatten at an angle as the head snaps back. It'll go underneath the skin of the forehead. As the head comes back forward in its whiplash of motion, the round wraps around the top of the skull underneath the skin and will generally exit out the back from under the skin, having never actually penetrated the skull. So a shot to the forehead is a waste of a round, a waste of time. It's dumb. I have met a couple of people who've gotten shot in the forehead. One of them got shot in the forehead with a .38 at relatively close range. He was a cop. He ended up, the guy, that was the last round the guy had. The cop was out of ammo. He ended up chasing the guy down and beating the dog smack out of this guy and taking him into custody. And then he wiped his forehead and realized he was bleeding. In the heat of the battle, what was going on, didn't even realize he'd been shot in the forehead. Okay? 2 inches lower, he would have been dead. Would have gone right into his brain. So, first of all, you got to know where to shoot in the forehead. Where to shoot in the head. It's essentially to the face. It's ear level. Line up the center of the target based at the relative level of the ear and shoot. Heads can tilt. Heads can turn. Heads can twist. Heads can bob. Heads can weave. know all of that stuff. That narrow band in the head is way, way smaller than the rib cage and chest area. About a quarter, maybe about one-fifth of the size of the chest. So you have to have a much, much more accurate shot. Not only is it 20 to 25% of the size of the chest area, the main target area, it also moves at a higher rate of speed with much more efficiency and much less predictability. So if you're trying to shoot someone to the head, realize on a static target out at the range, it's just standing there waiting to be shot. Human beings do not possess that trait of just standing there waiting to be shot unless they're being executed and they're strapped down. That is not defensive shooting. That's a different topic for a different radio show, for a different audience, in a different country. Not here. Here we talk about defensive stuff. Someone's bringing the fight to you, you respond. Responding with a shot straight to the head. Realize, if you get a round into the brain box, okay, into the face, into the brain, they're going to be, and this is a scientific term, DRT, Delta Robert Tango, DRT, which stands for dead right there. All right? There's my scientific term for you, dead right there. If you shoot them into the brain box, they're going to be dead before they drop 6 inches. You've got the hydraulic system in the chest. You've got the electrical system in the brain. You will short out the electrical system instantly. Now, and I'm not talking about some sort of oblique angled shot, maybe that one that, you know, kind of wings through the edge of your head. Like if somebody's turning their head, you shoot and catch just the edge of their eye socket as their head is turning, you're not going to get anything. I actually used to work with a guy who put a gun in his mouth and pulled the trigger, figuring that that would get the brain. It actually blew out the back of his head and didn't get the brain. He's alive today, several years after this incident. So, and that was a contact shot with a 40 caliber round. Contact shot, 40 caliber round. Didn't even kill himself. Thank God, he's a good dude. Wow. So, with that being said, realize that if it does get into the brain, they're going to be dead. So, you know that. How are you going to answer those questions when it comes to the district attorney? Why did you shoot to the head? It's the way I trained. Why? Because I know that's going to stop him. Okay, well, you also are obviously aware that you know it's going to kill him, so you shot to kill, which is not what, guys, that's not defensive work. Shooting to kill is not defensive work. If you shoot them and they die, okay, that was a result of their actions. They started this deal. They brought to you an imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury. You responded with lethal force. Now, it doesn't mean that it's going to kill them. Lethal force, deadly force, is not kill force or die force. Okay? It's lethal force. It's deadly force. Are they going to die? Not necessarily. If they do, okay. You know, they brought it on you. They should have been prepared for that. If not, well, that was their own mistake. So you respond, give them two or three rounds of the chest, whatever it is. Let's say that they keep the fight coming, boom, then you shoot them in the head. Now we know why we don't shoot for the head. A, if you actually get the round where it belongs, you're going to kill them. If not, it might not do anything. It might reflect off of their forehead, and they're still a threat. They might not even know they got shot in the forehead. So that shot to the head is usually an all-or-nothing shot. Plus, it's 20 to 25% the size, a quarter to a fifth the size of the chest area, and it moves a whole lot more. It moves a lot more with a lot more agility, and its movement is far less predictable. So why waste your time trying to place that precision shot in such a moving, dynamic target area when you've got this big, fat chest that you can fire multiple rounds into? That is why you shoot for the chest first. There are three occasions, and three occasions only, to forget about shooting to the chest and go straight to the head. I've talked about these before. I feel it necessary now to go through them again. One is if they are bringing the fight to you and they have obvious body armor on. If they're obviously wearing body armor. And, you know, there's been reports of back in the 90s, gangbangers in L.A. getting these Kevlar-belted radial tires and making kind of this patchwork of sorts of a body armor sort of thing. It works. Layer a couple of those things up, it works. How easy is it to get body armor these days, guys? Go online and get it off of eBay. Now, I don't subscribe to gun magazines, and I might buy three a year. I kind of doubt I buy three. I might buy one or two. But even so, I would imagine if I go back in the classifieds, I could probably find body armor there. It's getting cheaper, and it's easier to find, and anybody can get it. I know you can get it online from multiple sources. So getting body armor is easy. Somebody has obvious body armor on. If you can see it, sometimes they wear it over their clothing. Well, don't shoot to the body armor. That's when you'd go straight to the head. The second is if they're behind some sort of cover. Now, cover is bulletproof. Concealment is not. Cover would be an engine block of a car. Cover would be a steel girder against a handgun round. Concealment might be a curtain. Concealment might simply be darkness. Concealment would be a cardboard box. Concealment can get shot through. Okay? Cover's bulletproof, concealment is not, but you can't visually see through either. So if they're behind cover, and all they're showing you is their head, is they lean out and start firing rounds at you, or whatever the case may be, that's the second time to take the headshot of. It's the only target that they present to you. Okay? So there's three opportunities to do this. The first, obvious body armor. Second is if that's the only target they give to you. The third one is if there is a hostage situation. They've got one of your loved ones, and you might have a reasonable portion of the chest that you can see. Because, you know, the way they take a hostage is from behind, right? So they might be showing you a little bit of the chest area. But does the chest deactivate their trigger finger, or does the chest deactivate the knife that's up against their throat? When somebody gets shot, what happens generally, especially in an area where they're not instantly incapacitated up to the brain, what happens? They generally flinch. So if they've got a finger on the trigger and they flinch, what are they going to do? They're going to shoot the hostage. Or if they've got a knife to the throat, what are they going to do? They're going to cinch up and they're going to cut into the throat of the hostage. They might even be able to consciously just finish off the hostage, especially if they think they're going down. To punish you, to punish them. So, the third time to take a shot directly to the head, you cannot risk the bad guy taking out the hostage. You cannot risk a failure to stop. You cannot risk the flinch. That's when you would take one directly to the head, directly to the face, as it were. And generally, in a hostage situation, you don't have such a dynamic, chaotic setting. That's usually when the bad guy is trying to figure out a way out of there, taking a pause, taking a moment, checking out the situation, possibly trying to negotiate his way out of there. Okay? That is when you can take a little bit more time and take that shot. Several times, this sort of shot has been taken while the opposite negotiating party, that would be you in this case, let's say he's got your loved one by the throat with a knife to the throat or with a gun to their head. And you've got your gun pointed in at their face and you're aligning the sights and you're letting them know, relax. You've got my daughter, you've got my wife, you've got my husband, whatever it is. You've got my loved one. Their name is so-and-so. You know, like I might say, you've got my wife. Her name is Susan. Now, we've got a couple of kids. You personalize them. And this comes directly from a guy who is an FBI hostage negotiator. You personalize them as you're aligning the sights and taking the slack out. Even if your words, you can have the gun pointed directly in their face. If your words are calming, C-A-L-M-I-N-G. If your words are calming to them, you can have a gun in their face and they'll tolerate it for at least a little while, at least a short window of time. And that's enough time, like, you know, several seconds. That's enough time to finish aligning the sights and press the shot smoothly. Keep in mind, this is not something to just try on the street. Hostage rescue shots are the most dangerous shots that there are. I've practiced enough of them, thousands and thousands and thousands of them. I'm completely comfortable doing this. I practice them. There's a way to practice it. There's a way to set up targets to practice it. Or you can even buy these photo targets and practice it. There's a way to do it. Without that skill level, don't bother. You'll learn that if you come to the 2A radio show handgun course in March. That's the times to go to the head, Pete and everybody else. Otherwise, the chest doesn't move that much. It's a target that's 400 to 500% bigger, 4 to 5 times the size, and it's a lot easier to hit, and it wraps all the way around the body. Stay tuned, guys. More to come after the break.
Your right to listen and take action shall not be infringed. The 2A Radio Show with Bill Carnes is back. 1-800-313-9443.
Okay, so we're going to talk for just a minute about the out-of-touch world of courts. Now, in D.C. versus Heller, the Supreme Court made it abundantly clear that the handgun ban in Washington, D.C. was unconstitutional. In New Jersey, a court there said Americans have no right to buy handguns. A New Jersey appeals court concluded that Americans have no Second Amendment right to buy a handgun. In a case decided last week, the Superior Court upheld a state law saying that nobody may possess any handgun without obtaining law enforcement approval and permission in advance. Now, that outcome might seem like something of a surprise, especially after D.C. versus Heller. But a unanimous 3-judge panel ruled that Heller has no impact upon the constitutionality of the state law. So evidently, in New Jersey, the term shall not be infringed doesn't exist, as it doesn't exist in the state of California. So if you live in New Jersey, you have to get a permission slip from law enforcement, which, keep in mind, law enforcement has absolutely no legal obligation to have to provide you any protection whatsoever. So you have to go to the very organization that has no responsibility in having to provide you any protection to ask them if you can have permission to go buy a handgun so you can provide your own protection. You get that? It's the same thing if you have to go to your police or sheriffs and beg permission to get a concealed weapons permit from the very organization which has no legal standing to have to provide protection to you. You've got to ask them if you can provide protection to yourself, and they might say no. If I lived in a state like that, in my application, I would insert the highlights from the Supreme Court case that says police are under no obligation to have to provide police protection. I would highlight that and say, for these reasons alone, I am looking to be able to provide protection for myself and my family, because nobody has any responsibility to have to provide protection to me but me. Also, it would seem that in this New Jersey court case, it would escape them the Thomas Jefferson quote, and I'm paraphrasing, that that which is illegal for the citizenry but legal for the government is tyranny. Hence, the magazines that say for government or law enforcement use only. I'd like to close by saying, to those of you within our government, we will be watching you. In Congress, the executive and judicial branches all very closely as we organize to save our freedom, liberty, and country. We will not become the subjects of governmental rule. Guys, thanks for listening this week. I would like to close and ask Quince to please call me on my cell phone. Thanks, guys. Bye-bye.
Bill will be here tomorrow. Will your freedoms? The Two-Way Radio Show, 7 a.m. Pacific, 9 Central, Monday through Friday.